2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to the Taco Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. If you like what you see on the podcast, or I guess what you hear on the podcast, and you want to check out our tools and spreadsheets, come check us out at DFSArmy.com. Use promo code TACO on sign up for a lifetime 10% off. We are headed to the Valspar Championship. Going back to Florida after a week off in Mexico. Most of the field is either coming back from either Mexico or Puerto Rico, where they just recently had the Pro-Am. They didn't have the Puerto Rico Open, as they usually do. They just had a special Pro-Am because the event was canceled due to the hurricane damage there. And this field will kind of be pretty similar to the Honda Classic. There are a lot of similarities between the two. They're both some of the hardest courses on tour. Bermuda greens, good old Florida Bermuda, and then a lot of the similarities stop there. When looking at this course is very dangerous if you wander off the fairways here. And these are extremely tight fairways, some of the tightest fairways on the PGA Tour. It's one of the 10 hardest courses on the PGA Tour historically. It's got some very unique features. These Bermuda greens are gigantic. They're huge. Coming in at 7,500 square feet. They're some of the biggest greens on tour. I think they were the biggest outside of Oakmont last year. And despite that, the green regulation numbers just come in at average, 63%. You'd expect them to be larger, or you expect people to hit more greens and regulations with these giant sizes of greens, but since they have to club down in order to keep it in the fairway, which is evident from the statistics, an average driving distance of 269 yards, with this being a 7,300 yard par 71 course, you still are going to need a bit of distance, especially on your approach shots. If you're going to be clubbing down off of the tee in order to stay on the fairway, and you're absolutely going to want to do that. If you miss the fairways here, you are just screwed. They're tree-lined, and they're also somewhat swampy if you get too far out in there. The double bogey numbers and bogey numbers are actually pretty low. We don't see very many bogeys here compared to most other tournaments. Even though it's one of the hardest courses on tour, we see a lot of triple bogeys. But not very many bogeys. This is what we would call a par fest. I rank top 5 in par percentage. Almost 70% of the holes here will be parred. And it ranks second to last in birdie percentage. It's just average. It's average for a tournament with eagle percentage at about 0.5% of the holes here being eagled. But that's actually kind of low considering that there are 4 par 5s on this course. But the par 5s are where you're going to get your birdies from if you get any. These par 4s are very tough, and they all average over par. And then you have 5 par 3s this week, and that's also going to be key. More par 3s than usual. This week is kind of interesting because some of the stats that we look at every week very closely, par 4 scoring and approach number, stroke gained approach, are kind of minimized this week. I think this is the lowest number of par 4s that you'll see on a course all year long. And as far as approach goes, these giant greens, they're humongous. They give you a lot of room for error. Approach is still important. You're always going to want to be able to hit the ball close to the pin. So there's never going to be a week where approach doesn't really matter. But it probably matters almost the least in this week compared to other weeks. It's just not like the number one thing that we're looking at. We are going to want to find guys that can putt well on these slow Bermuda greens. And I have those numbers for you guys. Just compared it strokes game putting on all the different courses that have these slower Bermuda greens. And there are quite a few of them. So you can go on the research station, check out who is good and who is not good at these slow Bermuda grass greens. And past that, driving accuracy is going to be important. This is quite the accuracy course here, because staying on the fairway is just absolutely essential. But sometimes the numbers can be a little bit off. Really, you're just going to want to look at guys who are not going to be taking the driver out. What I did was I took there are several other courses, like the RBC Heritage and whatnot, where the average driving distance is very low and players often club down. I took all of those events, the club down or the less than driver courses, that's what I ended up calling it, and put made a stat for that just using the strokes gained tee to green averages at those kind of events. And you can see that some players really pop at these kind of events compared to their normal performance, but other players tend to struggle once the driver's out of their hand. We'll talk about a few of these guys as we get into the player picks here, but when looking back at the historical performances here, what led to fantasy scoring, we see a lot of just your plotters, your hit the green, hit the fairway kind of guys, some really short driving distances. Jim Furyk and Luke Donald put up some major 100-plus fantasy point performances, averaging 265 off of the tee. Robert Garrigus in 2012 was one of the only times where someone hitting over 300 yards scored over 100 fantasy points. For most of the other performances like that, these are coming from your accuracy guys. Luke Donald, Jordan Spieth, Jim Furyk, Ken Duke, John Sendin, these type of guys. This is the kind of event where an older guy can have success, because that distance is just not needed. You're not going to need to pull the driver out of the club. So we're looking at guys like Steve Stricker and actually giving them a chance this week. And when looking back at last year, not every year is this the case, but last year certainly, approach numbers were very important. It's very important to realize that, last year Adam Hadwin and Patrick Cantlay, those are pretty much the tops of the field as far as strokes gained approach goes, and they finished 1 and 2. Off of the tee, Adam Hadwin actually lost strokes off of the tee, was still able to win. We also saw some good putting, also correlating with success. Only Tony Finau last year was able to lose strokes putting and still have an all right performance, and he made that up with an excellent approach game and gaining tons of strokes off of the tee. He was magnificent off of the tee here last year, hitting it almost 300 yards off of the tee while hitting 77% of his greens in regulation. And that really bailed him out there from a bad putting performance. But other than that, we're going to see guys gaining strokes on the green, kind of up and down here. These are really easy greens compared to normal. They are these slow Bermuda ones that a lot of golfers are comfortable with. But outside of, maybe one performance, all the top tier putting performances correlated with a top 10, top 15 finish for these guys. And last year we saw a few eagles kind of bump some guys up in the standings as far as fantasy scoring goes, but only a couple of guys scored over 100 fantasy points. These scores are going to be on the low side. This is one of the tougher courses. Winning scores coming around minus 14 from last year, minus 13, minus 10, minus 12. Somewhere in that range, you're not going to be having 120 fantasy point outputs over the last decade. The most fantasy points scored in a tournament was actually last year, Adam Hadwin, when he won. He scored 112. So that kind of hurts the studs in a way, because you're going to be paying about $12,000 for Jordan Spieth. And it seems worth it, but with how low the guys are scoring, it's going to be a little bit harder to justify getting that highest scoring guy, I guess. You'll still want to play some Spieth. It's just that, when the scores are low, we see the floor is kind of low for everybody across the board. So it makes the super expensive guys just not really worth their value as much compared to the guys in the middle of the pack. there'll be a lot of plays to talk about once we get to the, you know, the mid-tier section. And not all of the studs are here from last week, obviously. You've got about five or six really good studs in this event, but that's it. And it's not a super weak field. You know, a lot of your PGA Tour regulars are making the stop here, getting ready for Augusta. And you've got some European guys, not as many as we've had the last 2 weeks, but you've got your few that are getting ready for Augusta. And it's coming in less than 1 month. We've got less than 1 month until the Masters. So really excited for that. So, yeah, let's get into this field here. Real quick, I'd like to touch on the fact that Phil Mickelson won last week. How exciting is that? This is a guy, you know, we talk about Charles Howell III and Paul Casey and guys like these, just guys that never win. You know, Matt Kuchar, even though they've won in the past, you know, these guys that have gone winless for years and years, they can win. They absolutely can win. And Phil Mickelson won despite, you know, me being absolutely certain that JT was going to pull that off, because he just wins all the freaking time. He didn't even look like he had a chance until like the third round and just caught fire. And I pretty much knew he was going to win, but man, Phil couldn't have looked any better. So congrats to Phil. I'm not the biggest Phil fan in the world, but absolutely impressive win for him last week. And I'm really excited about using him at Augusta, but more excited about using him at the Shell Houston Open. So we've got Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, and Henrik Stenson making his PGA Tour debut of the season, and Justin Rose, and those will be your 10,000 and plus guys on DraftKings, your super studs of the week. And it's not going to be like last week where you can't really afford these guys. You're going to be able to afford these guys, as this is a full field event, and this is quite the swing from last week. Last week we had a field that was highly concentrated and small, a no-cut event, an absolute bomber's course. We are going a full 180 degrees in the opposite direction here. We have a full field of over 140 golfers, so a packed field, a bigger field, you know, because sometimes these fields can get down to 130, 120. This is about almost 150. So this is a full golf field, over twice as many golfers as last week, if not almost three times, about two and a half times as many golfers as last week. So the numbers and pricing are going to be very different. You can't compare the pricing to last week. That's just absurd. But we go from a complete bomber's course, 6,000 or 7,000 feet in the air last week, to, you know, a coastal Florida course that's like 12 feet in the air. And you know, a lot of newer golfers or newer DFS PGA players are going to have a hard time adjusting from the no-cut nature of last week into the wild world of a full cut event at a super accuracy course like this, where guys can get into trouble. We won't have the water problems. Water will come into play at about four or five of these holes, but it's nothing crazy like PGA National or even like last week. It's not quite that crazy with the water, but you can still splash a few. I'm more worried about getting lost in these trees or in the swampy areas. That's going to suck. Seeing some snowman on your guy's card, it's just going to ruin your day. And with a cut to worry about, it ruins it even more than last week. So at 11-8 on DraftKings, 12-4 on FanDuel, Jordan Spieth comes in as the number one player on the board. Added this new column to the research station. Just shows average fantasy points of this course. Spieth ranks number one with average fantasy points of this course at 78.5. Over his four events, and those are all top 20 finishes, one win in 2015, and it just feels right, you know, a course where distance isn't the most important thing. His driving accuracy numbers are just okay. I mean, he's not like super short off the tee. He's driving at over 300 yards right now, but he's definitely known for his short game more than, you know, his off the tee game. And if strokes gained off the tee isn't going to be that important this week, that just works right into Spieth's wheelhouse. The issues with him is, you know, he had that miscut at the Waste Management, and his approach numbers have kind of gone downhill a little bit this year. Since the swing season, you know, the swing season, he was looking great. His approach numbers were just off of the charts. They're negative now. He's actually losing strokes approach, so I'm kind of worried about that. You know, he's always scrambling well, and his putting numbers are not good at all, and they haven't been good throughout this whole year. I mean, he's losing half a stroke per round on the greens. And looking at the slow Bermuda numbers, we also see, again, losing half a stroke to the field. You know, all of the studs here are good at these less than driver courses. You know, strokes gained, tee to green, that metric will usually favor more of your studs. So I'd be more worried if there's a guy that had a problem with these. But, you know, all the studs are going to be good at the less than driver courses. And, you know, Spieth, I know his course history here is great. It's pretty much perfect. And, you know, this seems like a course that could work out for him. We don't have a lot of other, like, big winners as far as studs go in this field. You know, we have guys like Paul Casey and whatnot, Tony Finau, that, you know, guys that aren't huge win. You know, there's no DJ in this field. There's no one really that sticks out as like, you know, this guy is like the favorite to win. So outside of Spieth, and Spieth is the 8-1 favorite to win. You know, at 12K, almost 8K, or 8-1 isn't that great as far as value goes. But with Rory McIlroy following at 14-1, Sergio 15-1, he is pretty much the favorite here, and he's won here before. It just feels like Spieth isn't playing. His golf that he's playing right now isn't nearly as good as it had been the last year or two. And the approach numbers are kind of falling off. I'm not huge on Spieth this week, but, you know, the course history is fine. And he can scramble if he does miss these greens. I'm just kind of worried about him because he's going to club down. He's not going to spray it off of the tee or anything. But I just worry about his approach numbers. I'm not really sure that he has the top five upside, but it just doesn't feel like he has the top five upside that he had, you know, in years past where he was like winning every other tournament. Rory McIlroy, I'm also not too huge on him either. He's had a rough start to his PGA Tour year, hitting the ball really long, but that doesn't matter here. You know, 312 yards off the tee is cool, but when you're clubbing down, what does it matter? His approach numbers are still really good. Other than that, he's having a rough time. Losing strokes on the green, around the green, off the tee, just because of his accuracy. His accuracy is actually almost dead on the same as Jordan Spieth's at 58%, which is not great. He is putting better on slow Bermuda greens than Spieth is. I'm just worried about his fantasy scoring. Looking at fantasy scoring per hole, he's by far the worst of anyone in this range. Spieth, Garcia, Stenson, and you know, that's over the long term there. I don't know, it's just with him, you know, he's really good at those long and tough par fives, and at this course all the par fives are pretty darn easy, so his advantage is kind of minimized there, and he just hasn't been playing the greatest golf. You know, a 20th place finish at the Genesis is the best thing we've seen from him. He missed the cut at Pebble Beach and didn't look great at Honda. I will have to wait and see with him, but I'm not going to go in on him quite yet. I'm going to like him more at different courses, especially a different course type than this. Then you got Sergio Garcia, 15-1. I kind of like him straight up over Rory a lot better, and I think other people will as well. Hasn't played this course in 4 years, but going back from 2013, he has an excellent course history here. Just finished 7th last week. Apparently all the Spanish guys finished top 25 last week, and he was the best of them. You know, 33rd at the Honda to start the year, and he was killing it overseas before. He's looking really good. Has one of the best, if not the best, I think he actually has the best. No, he's tied with Charles Schwartzel for the best long-term miscut percentage, or a made cut percentage. You don't want to have a high miscut percentage, but a 91% made cut percentage, excellent. You know, a few wins. One of those wins was pretty important from last year. You know, sort of won at Augusta, but you know, that course doesn't really correlate that closely to this one. In fact, it's a completely different course than this one, but still, Sergio's approach numbers in the short term are looking really, really nice, and he's scoring. He's scoring well just overall, you know, DraftKings scoring, birdies and bonuses, eagles, he's getting those. You gotta like him right now. The only thing he can't do is putt. But for what it's worth, he's better at putting on these slow Bermudas than he is at poa and bent grass greens. So, you know, that's something to look at there. I just like his I like his recent approach game. I know that he can, you know, he can spray it a little historically, and he's definitely one to take riskier shots. So I almost want to keep him in GPP, although he just seems like a solid cash play. But I'm gonna be playing someone else in cash. You know, we get the debut of one of my favorite guys here. But you know, Sergio would not make a bad cash play. Honestly, he's just really solid, and you know, 62% driving accuracy, better than Rory and Spieth, that's for sure. And Rory, you shouldn't be considering cash anyway. If you're gonna start your cash game lineup and you want a stud in there, Sergio or Jordan Spieth would be a good way to go. I'm personally gonna start with my guy, Henrik Stenson. Oh, it's his first event of the PGA Tour season. Had a shaky go of it last year, but we know long term this guy is a beast. And what does he do at every single event? He clubs down. He doesn't care for his driver whatsoever, and it shows here. Last 3 years here, all top 11 finishes. 7th place last year. His course history doesn't, outside of Spieth, he has the highest average fantasy points per event, you know, here at 75. A driving accuracy of 72%, which is immaculate, but that's the name of his game. He's always been known for two things: a good driving accuracy and good approach, or good greens regulation. And that's the name of the game at this course. This course is just made for Stenson. And the only concern that I have here is that his putting numbers, which are usually good, he's generally a good putter, his putting numbers at slow Bermuda greens have not been great over the years at all, losing about a stroke per round on slow Bermuda greens, but not at this event. That's for sure. He putts really well at this event, so we'll have to see how that goes. I'm going to be using him quite a lot because it just makes the most sense. I know that he hasn't played on the PGA Tour yet this year, but he's been doing all right overseas. Just had a good finish at Abu Dhabi not too long ago. I'm not worried about him. He's not in bad form or anything. He's not missing cuts like he was last year. You know, he had that crazy multi-year made cut streak. Now looking at his made cut numbers over the long term, 77%. And he does tend to withdraw sometimes. But, you know, Stenson got that out of the way earlier this year. If you recall, last year he withdrew from the World Golf Classic in Mexico with stomach problems. So he didn't want to mess with that this year. He just stayed in Florida. And I know that he's Swedish. You know, it says on his card he's from Sweden, but he doesn't live in Sweden. He lives in Orlando. So Florida is really home to him at this point. So I am absolutely not concerned about Stenson at all. There's not really much rust to be had. He's a veteran that just always plays well during the Florida swing and on through the Masters and major season. I'm just not worried about him like I'm sure other people are with him. I'm going to be using a hefty amount of him. Even if he wasn't my favorite golfer, I would still be targeting him here because this is just an absolute perfect course fit, and it's shown throughout the years. Justin Rose is 10,000, 11,700 on FanDuel, so quite the price bump over there. And he's had success here. He hasn't played in a few years, and he missed the cut by a few strokes in 2015, but before that he had several top 15 finishes. Never did that bad outside of that one miscut in 2015. And if you recall back then, 2015, he was going through a back injury. Right around this time of the year back in 2015, he was going through a back injury, so he almost wiped that away. He is really good here, and even though his driving accuracy numbers are horrible, believe me, it gets a lot better when you get the club out of his hand, and you can see that in his less than driver courses, strokes gain metrics there, gaining a stroke and a half tee to green on these less than driver courses, better than usual. And he's usually not a good putter, but this year he's been putting pretty well, you know, gaining a quarter of a stroke per round on the greens. Not used to seeing that from Rose, but hey, you go, man. Didn't look the greatest last week. Finished in the bottom half of the rounds 2 and 3. He'd shown some signs of life there, but he ended up just bleeding it all back and did not look too great at the WGC Mexico event. But before then, coming in, he had just been on a tear. Top 10 finish after top 10 finish after top 10 finish. So I'm not worried about him bouncing back here. You know, I'd rather have Stenson, who's just been chilling, instead of messing around with the elevation in Mexico. And you could honestly probably hear that narrative be talked about, or being talked about a lot, you know, the jet lag from some of these guys coming from playing a full week event or a full no-cut event up in the elevation in Mexico and whatnot. And, you know, Rose, just like Stenson, Garcia, Spieth, or not Spieth, obviously not Spieth, but Casey, Tiger, guys like this, you know, a lot of older guys here, but this is an older guy's course. So, you know, maybe there's some merit to be targeting the guys that aren't coming from Mexico or Puerto Rico, like a Stenson, but it's probably something that you don't want to overconsider as well. So, dipping into the $9,000 range on DraftKings, although still expensive over on FanDuel at 11-4, Paul Casey, who, this is a surprising fact. This is very surprising, but Paul Casey is older than Matt Kuchar. You know, I've heard people talk about Kuchar getting really old, but still being all in on Paul Casey. But it's like, man, you know, Casey's older. I know that Kuchar's bald and stuff, but you know, Casey's an older man. But it didn't show last week. Everyone was concerned. You know, he was a core play, one of the top projected plays for last week. Started off with a shaky round one. Almost had my head on a stake, but he turned it around a major way. Started birdieing like crazy and finished 12th last week. And it's really par for the course with Casey. He has a pretty ridiculous long-term form. 69% of the events that he enters, he finishes top 30. You know, 56% top 20 percentage. It's also just really nice. So over half of the time, he's finishing top 20. That's with the no-cut events removed, too. I mean, those numbers are just staggering. Casey is just always cash safe, and you know, maybe last week wasn't the best week to play cash, but you can absolutely play cash this week. Casey is, however, he's not 8,400 anymore. He's not completely inappropriately priced. His price is about where it needs to be, honestly, so I'm not going to go crazy with Casey, because he is priced right. And Tiger Woods, 9,500, or 9,700 on FanDuel. You know, if you're going to play him anywhere, play him on FanDuel, obviously. The odds on him, the odds numbers are never going to be right. You know, he's like 30-1 right now, but should really be about 50-1. I know he looked good at Honda. Top 15 finish at Honda after missing the cut at Genesis. It's just, man, that driving accuracy number right now, it's still well under 50%. I know a lot of that was from, like, the Farmers, where he shot, like, 33% driving accuracy or something ridiculous like that, but he's getting a little bit better, but I'd really like to see him, you know, maybe clubbing down will be good for him, really. Interesting note about him is that of all of these studs, he's actually considerably better than the studs at slow Bermuda grass putting. Gains a stroke per round. I know there aren't very many events to go off of here because he hasn't played a bunch, but you know, he has done well whenever he's come across these Florida Bermuda greens, and historically that's held up as well. So I don't know about playing Tiger yet. He's still just like priced insanely, but man, that 12th place finish at the Honda makes you want to play him just a little bit. You know, I'm definitely gonna have my sprinkle of Tiger magic in there, but I'm not gonna make him a core play or anything. Tony Finau is 9,400, 10,800 on FanDuel. Had an amazing performance here last year, like I was talking about earlier. Had that crazy mix of distance with accuracy that led to success here. Again, usually he can't putt, but he's actually been gaining the tiniest fraction of a stroke on the green this year. He's just been having a good year and a half for him. And he putts better on these slow Bermuda greens than normal. He really does. His fantasy scoring numbers are insane. He averages almost a fantasy point per hole on par threes, which is nuts. Him and Casey both just stick out huge in that regard. So I like that with all the par threes on the course. And of course he smashes par fives, but not as much as you'd expect him to, honestly. He really is just good at everything. And he can drive the ball 316 yards, but he doesn't need to this week. His less than driver course numbers are not that great at all, especially compared to the studs. Him and a few of the guys in this $9,000 range really don't have the best numbers there at all, but everything else in this game suggests that he's going to have another good finish here, and he's just been so consistent. The only cut that he's missed in the last like 9 months was at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and he missed by one stroke. So Finau, I like him. I just don't like him nearly as much as I did last week. And you know, last week until the very end, he looked like he was going to be a big player in that event. But I still don't mind it. I don't mind using him just for his consistency. But if you're thinking of like the course, I mean, he doesn't really make a whole lot of sense then. But moving to Ryan Moore, 9,100 seems expensive for him, but he's finished top 20 in this event the last 3 years. Finished third in 2016, but back in 2013, 2012, he actually finished almost dead last in this field, so it's a weird course history for him. That year off in 2014 really turned things around for him, I guess. But he's been low-key pretty all right throughout the swing season into the regular season here. That top 10 finish at the Genesis, which is another accuracy course like this. You know, Tony Finau finished runner-up there as well, but you know, Genesis isn't exactly like this event. You know, this event's more like the Honda Classic, honestly. You know, with the Genesis Open having those Poa and Nui greens, it just being on the West Coast and not in Florida. But still more, he's not going to have any ownership whatsoever. And I like this play a lot, honestly. The odds don't really stick out as a value for him, but he's really good here, and more historically is someone who is really good at, you know, par threes and par fives, actually sneaky good at par fives. Really good at par fives so far this year. He's been getting eagles on him. And, you know, his distance off the tee will finally not be a huge disservice to him. So I kind of really do like Moore as a sneaky low-owned play. Adam Hadwin at $8,800. Your defending champion here. He'll be popular because not only did he win last year, he's coming off of two straight top 10 finishes. And so far in the season, he's perfect in cuts, three top 10s. Killing it statistically. One of the best fantasy points per hole numbers of anyone in the entire... Actually, I think, yeah, he's number one in this entire field in fantasy points per hole. Even though his approach numbers aren't good this year, he's losing half a stroke per round. But, you know, even in putting, you know, losing half a stroke per round, and that's usually his MO is putting. And we see it on the slow Bermuda greens. He gains about a stroke on the greens here. You know, with Hadwin, it's just like last year. Hadwin got so hot and just consistently made cut after cut after cut after cut. He'd gotten really slow, you know, slowed down a lot towards the end of the year into the swing season. And he started looking almost kind of bad, but now he's picked it up again, and he's just looking excellent. I know the last two tournaments have been courses where he had good course history at, and he didn't have good course history here, actually. He missed both of the cuts at this event. Or I think in 2015 he made the cut and then MDF'd, missed the cut by a couple strokes in 2016, and then turned it around and won here. But Hadwin is kind of a form over course history type of player, and you know, we've seen so many repeat champions throughout the last year. You saw it with Brendan Steele, saw it with, who was it that, I mean, a couple of years ago we saw it with Jimmy Walker and Scott Stallings on the West Coast swing, get a couple back-to-back victories. We saw Bubba at the Travelers winning multiple times in a row. We saw Berger repeat. We saw Justin Thomas repeat. So it's not out of the picture. It's not like guys can't repeat because guys are doing it a lot. So he's going to be a very popular play this week, probably a good cash game play. Yeah, he's going to stick out in pretty much everything. The only thing I don't really like from him are his statistics because he's losing strokes in both approach and putting, and that's what I'm looking at this week. But, you know, the price is kind of It's hard to say the price is right at $8,800 for Hadwin, but given the circumstances, the prices seem pretty right with him. Adam Scott at $8,700. Man, he was not looking good at the Honda Classic, to be quite honest. And then he got it together, just barely made the cut, and then made a T13 out of it. And, you know, Scott was a super value play then. He was like 7,000 something. Now 8,700 in this field, it still seems like he's a little bit too cheap, but given the shaky recent form, he's probably priced about where he needs to be. Still makes for a nice... I don't know about cash gameplay. I guess he's a borderline cash gameplay, just for his like approach. And his recent putting numbers have actually... Really, that's where he's been gaining strokes recently, is on the green. Which is very shocking for Scott, but I think switching to the cross-handed putt has helped him a lot. And Brandon Grace, $8,600. He has a nice-looking game log, but doesn't have a very good odds-to-pricing situation going on for him. So I'm not sure how chalky he's going to be. Did okay here in 2016, but missed the cut by a couple of strokes in 2014. Yeah, average fantasy points at 33 per event. It's not that great, but 2016 was a really hard year for this event. In 2016, this was, I think, the fourth or fifth hardest event on tour, and the winning score wasn't very big at all. I think it was like minus 10 or minus 11. But Brendan Grace makes for, you know, a sneaky European kind of play. Maybe more so, of course, on FanDuel than DraftKings because of that. And it cost a lot more on FanDuel, $10,700, which is pretty costly for someone that's $8,600 on DraftKings. But he'll have like no ownership there. Makes for a good GPP play. And on DraftKings, he's all right priced, $8,600. There are just going to be plays in this area. You want to play more than him. Webb Simpson is kind of popping out in the projections a little bit. Used to have good course history here, like really good course history, and then just hit a brick wall. And he had been missing cuts since 2014. Just barely made the cut here last year. His form's been pretty good. Had a few top five finishes at the Sony and at the Honda Classic. Bottom half of the field last week. That wasn't great. Not the best off of the tee. And other than that, his strokes gain numbers are all just barely above average. But he does do well at these less than driver courses. And he scores well. He scores well in general, a fantasy point per hole, which is a good mark to hit, and good at his par 5 scoring. It's just hard to really trust Webb Simpson, but usually, I guess, he only tends to burn people at courses that he has great course history at, and it looks like he did that back in 2014. If we were playing DraftKings back in 2014, he would probably cost like $12,000 here with how good his course history was. He would have screwed over everybody. That's his MO. But there are several other plays, pretty much the exact same odds in this range here for a little bit cheaper, like Byung-Hung An and Matthew Fitzpatrick from the European Tour. Of course, Fitzpatrick theoretically is a good fit for this course, but at less than driver courses, he actually loses a stroke and a half tee to green. Not good at all. I mean, he kind of relies on his putter a lot, and his putting numbers at Slow Bermuda courses are spectacular. So it's a matter of, you know, if you value tee to green, Fitzpatrick ain't your guy, but if you value putting, he is absolutely your guy. And, you know, his driving accuracy number, 66%, is all right. It's not great like people make it out to be, or it's not, the numbers don't pop as much as they do on the European Tour, of course, but you know, he could be sneaky enough. He finished just middle of the field last week, but he had been in super hot form from Europe coming in, so I don't really mind the play much at all, but I do prefer An, who, nothing but top 25 finishes for An so far in the year. And, you know, when you get the driver out of his hand, he's actually pretty accurate. Even with the driver in his hand, driving accuracy is 65%. It's almost as good as Fitzpatrick's with him driving the ball 10 yards farther. And his par 3 fantasy point scoring at par 3 holes are very, very, very good. I like to see that on him. Matt Kuchar's a guy that screwed us last week. $8,200 for him. His course history here couldn't be much better. Pretty much always top 30 at this event. But he was not looking good last week at all. Statistically, everything was just trash for him. But he absolutely pops these less than driver courses because, I mean, it just makes sense. He's not the longest off of the tee, but good at keeping in the fairway. Usually, this year, the numbers have been terrible, and last week he was just garbage at keeping in the fairway. But, you know, the ball was going way farther than he's used to. You know, this is going to be way, way more normal for him. And, you know, he's not that old. He's not even 40 yet, guys. I know he looks like he's 50. He's not even 40. And he has one of the best course histories here outside of Dufner. Just nothing but top 30s for him. So I don't mind it at all. I just don't know if I'm going to roll it in cash. Like, usually that's what I do with Kuchar. Usually it's Matt Kasher. 8,200. I'll probably play him again in cash, honestly. Let's be real here. Long-term made cut percentage of 90%. That's excellent. You know, top 20 percentage of 50%. And, you know, he just had a top 5 at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. He can do it at any time. He's gonna give no ownership after last week. Just no ownership whatsoever. So I kind of like going back on Kuchar, even though he burned us last week. You know, long-term, that guy's made me a lot of money. I'm not going to say keep riding him, because I'm getting a lot of Archer phrasing type things from that. I'll just say I might keep using him in my lineups. Louis Oosthuizen looked good last week and then fell off of the planet after almost being your first and second round leader. He just fell back to 30th out of 65 guys. That's right in the middle of the field. What happened to you, Louis? But that's what happens in Mexico or any course with like water on it. Not really much to say about Louis Oosthuizen. I don't like him this week because almost all of his fantasy scoring comes on par fours. Like, he's a boss at par fours. This course has the lowest number of par fours on any course in the PGA Tour. It just doesn't play to his strengths because his numbers, like his fantasy scoring on par fives and par threes, are just trash. He gets all the scoring from par fours, I tell you. So I don't like the play just because of that. Kevin Na has been low-key pretty hot over the last few, or over the last month, really. Runner-up at the Genesis last time we saw him. He's just been chilling since then. I kind of like that. Missed the cut here last year. Kind of burned a lot of people, but he was in pretty terrible form. You know, almost all last year. He was just in awful, awful form. But the 3 years before that, all top 25 finishes. Runner-up in 2014. At $8,000, don't mind this play at all. I just kind of almost like the other guy at $8,000 more. Cameron Smith. Another top 10 finish for this guy back at the Genesis as well. I mean, he's right there with Na. But, you know, he's been on fire since the swing season, getting wins and stuff on the, you know, the Australian PGA Championship. And, you know, through the swing season, nothing but like top 10, top 15 finishes. And then, you know, if you hit the regular season, he's played four events. He still hasn't missed that cut or anything. And the only non-top 20 finish for him was at the Phoenix Waste Management Open. T48, which is okay enough, I guess, but I mean, the guy is such a monster on these slow Bermuda greens. Good scrambler. Other than that, the statistics are average, but his fantasy scoring per hole on par threes are pretty good. You know, there's not much to dislike about him. I know his long-term form sucks, but he was a really bad golfer for a while. Then he ended up getting that win with Jonas Blixt, and then all of a sudden he's really good. Really just turned it on over the swing season this year. He's just been on fire, and he hasn't really, you know, it's sort of like Chesson Hadley. He hasn't hit that point, or that event to where he just, like, blows up and does terribly. This might be it, but, you know, it hasn't happened yet. And he's still underpriced as always, so if you're going to use him, just keep using him. I'm definitely going to be using him a little bit. And that 7,900, Ches Reavy. I know that he has hit, you know, he missed the cut by one stroke at the Genesis and then looked pretty bad last week in Mexico. Not his type of course. Not long off the tee. He is a greens and fairways hitting dude. That is his MO. Smashes driving accuracy 70%. Also 70% green and regulation. Good par 3 score. Not the greatest of par 5s. I mean, he's your Furyk type, that's for sure. His approach numbers over the last 2 weeks have fallen off of a cliff, to be honest. You know, the 2 weeks prior to that at Pebble Beach and the Waste Management Phoenix Open, where he finished runner-up, He was losing in playoffs. His approach numbers were off the charts. Since then, it's turned around on him, but still gaining lots of strokes putting. And, you know, this is the type of course. He's finished top 30 here the last few years, but this is the exact type of course that you want to play a Ches Reavie on. So I'm about this play, but the absolute play of this upper 7K range, inarguably, although the odds don't look great for him, but you know, he's not really a winner here. He's just a lock for a top 25. And that's Jason Duffner. Since 2010, he's played this event every single year, and every single year always finishes top 30. T11 last year. I know he sucked in Mexico last week, but this is the weird thing about Duffner. Duffner's made like 20 cuts in a row, and he's played 4 no-cut events in that stretch. And at those 4 no-cut events, he's finished dead last or almost dead last in all of them. I don't know what it is, but for some reason, Jason Duffner absolutely hates no-cut events. Just look at his game log. It sticks out. He's terrible at no-cut events, but when it's a cut event, he always makes the cut. Every time. It's insane. And he absolutely always, and more adverbs, absolutely always incredibly makes the cut at this event and finishes top 30 year after year after year. Average fantasy points, 68. That's pretty good for, you know, having 8 years of data on this guy. He's just pretty much a cash game lock for sure. He's always a cash game lock for me, week to week, honestly. 90% made cut percentage over the last 3 years. But, you know, Duffner, I think he's the highest projected golfer that we have, or at least one of the highest. Yeah, I think the highest projected golfer in terms of value. Get your fill of him while you can. This is a course for him. Luke List, he's someone that you do not think of as fitting the course here whatsoever. Almost 320 yards off the tee and a driving average under 50%, but his less than driver courses, you know, the statistics I have for that, absolutely pops off the page. When you get a driver out of this guy's hand, he's really good. Finished T27 at this event last year, but you know, the other 2 years he played, he missed the cut pretty badly by multiple strokes. So course history is kind of a scratch there, but his recent form has been awesome. 3 straight top 26 finishes, runner up at the Honda. It's going to make him popular. He's definitely going to be a little bit popular because his odds stick out compared to everyone else in his range. I'm kind of fading just for the course fit, but I mean, honestly, when looking at the other courses like this, he does really well at them, so it's confounding. I'll just play a bit of him. Maybe, like, I'll try to play the same amount of him as, like, the field or something, and just not really make a big play on him. But I'll definitely have some Luke List just because his form is just incredible right now. Zach Johnson at 7,700. I like the play, even though the odds makers don't really here. His course history doesn't suggest that he's going to do well. I mean, last time we saw him here was 2013, and he finished dead freaking last. But that was quite a while ago. Haven't seen him in the last month, really. Last time we saw him, he just barely made the cut at the Waste Management. But had been in good form before then. So not really sure what we're going to see from Zach, but his greens regulation numbers are excellent. Not doing as well on par 3s. He's really gaining a lot of his fantasy points on par 4s, but he's low-key been doing pretty good on par 5s, actually. Statistically, don't like what he's done so far this year at all. You know, losing 2/3 of a stroke on approach per round, losing half a stroke putting. It's like, you're Zach Johnson. What are you doing? That's what you do. You putt. But if you think Zach Johnson is just going to be your, you know, typical Zach Johnson, you know, we've had a month off of him, so who knows what we're going to really get from him. But if we get your typical Zach Johnson, then $7,700 is way too cheap for him. But we don't know what we're going to get. The guy hasn't played in a month. Jason Kokrak at $7,700 has been in really good form recently, but he is the bomber and doesn't do that great at these less-than-driver courses. So, you know, and a lot of his scoring also comes from par 4s, so not huge about that. Patrick Reed at $7,700. I know his course history here is pretty good, but his form has not been good. Missed the cut by a stroke at the last two cut events he was at, and finished in the bottom half of the field last week in Mexico. I can't get too excited about Reed. Same thing with Haas, really. I know he got it around last time we saw him a month ago at the Waste Management, but who knows what he's really been doing since then. Runner-up here a couple of years ago, but his form hasn't been good, really, and who knows what to make of him. Ross Fisher, he's staying in the States for now, $7,600. He disappointed a lot of people last week because he's someone that usually does well at the WGC events, but one thing I like from him is that so far, based on what we've seen from him, his approach numbers are spectacular, and he's really sucking on par fours, to be honest. Like, just he's really bad at them. But his par three numbers are off the charts, and this is kind of the perfect course for that, you know? He's just going to be really sneaky. No one's going to play him after last week, and there are other plays in this range that people are going to like, so I like me some Ross Fisher here. Steve Stricker, coming off of his first Champions Tour win. He's like the Tiger Woods of the Champions Tour now. He's that fresh young blood, so his odds are like 2-1. It's crazy. He's going to be getting a lot of wins there. It's crazy to think of Stricker as being young, but that's what he is in the Champions Tour. And at this event, he hasn't played in a few weeks on tour, but we've seen him, you know, top 30 at the Waste Management and the Pebble, and that's what we've seen from him so far this year. He doesn't play many events, but when he plays, he does pretty good. He makes cuts. He stays pretty low key. Top 10 at this event here in 2016, but did miss the cut by two strokes back in 2017. So for Stricker, you know, I like him. I really do like him. You know, his game. I mean, I would pretty much define this as a Steve Stricker course. Driving accuracy of 82%. That's nuts. Driving distance, you know, 287 yards. That's not even bad. That's pretty good for someone his age. 287 yards. Just absolutely destroying strokes gained off of the tee. And that's all because of accuracy. He is not going to get you in trouble. You know, if this is a course you just need to par a lot, that's Steve Stricker. I mean, come on. He gains so many strokes putting, although I am concerned about his slow Bermuda numbers. They're not good. Loses about a half a stroke in those, but in general, he gains a half a stroke per round just on the greens. And, of course, he looks good in less-than-driver courses because he's Steve Stricker. He really should do better at less-than-driver courses because that helps him a lot. So, I don't know how popular he's going to be. He should get some ownership, but he's the same price as Charles Schwartzel. We'll talk about him real quick because the last 2 years here, he won and finished T6 last year. He's been really struggling, honestly. You know, I recall a few months ago there was this European Tour event. Can't remember which one for the life of me, but he had immaculate course history there. And, you know, he's like $11,000 or something. God, I wish I remember what tournament this was. But anyway, he was the chalk and he just sucked. He missed the cut horribly. On tour, he's barely making these cuts. You know, did very poorly last week. Finished 48th out of 65 golfers. Not good. And then barely made the cut at the Genesis. And then just, you know, finished T68. I know that Schwartzel's won the Masters and whatnot and has the best made cut percentage long term here. With a good sample size of 43 events. I mean, he does play on the PGA Tour usually. Had been playing a lot of Euro recently. But, Schwartzel, I don't know, his course history is great here, but honestly, before he won in 2016, the last time we had seen him was back in 2012, and he finished almost dead last. So, who knows? I mean, he actually averages more fantasy points on par 3s than he does par 4s or par 5s, and that's embarrassing. That's really embarrassing. I don't even know how that works out, but it's true. He gets more fantasy scoring from par 3s than par 4s or par 5s. That's insane. Insane. But for this course, you know, with the five par 3s, I mean, that's kind of what you want to see. Then you've got a few other guys in the $7,500 range. I really like this range a lot. And these are all, like, everyone that's $7,500 are guys you think of as perfect fits for this course. Kevin Streelman, Brant Snedeker, Russell Knox. These are your accuracy putting guys. You know, Knox is like the picture-perfect match. And Snedeker, that's always been his MO. Always has been. I like Snedeker, but not on FanDuel. He's $10,500 on FanDuel. That is ridiculous. he missed the cut by multiple strokes at the Honda. I don't know. I'm not too bullish, but he could be sneaky. I could see this being a type of event that he does well at, but you know, when you look at when you try to separate these guys by looking at the less than driver numbers, Russell Knox beats them all, gaining over a stroke tee to green at these less than driver courses. I like that a lot. And the $7,400 range, got some guys that usually always like, you know, Charles Howell. I know he just missed the cut at Honda, but that's one of the few courses in the early part of the season where he doesn't have crazy history, and this might be one of them. He had three straight top 15 finishes going into the 2017 event where he finished a measly T49. What a loser. But, yeah, really good. Really good numbers for him. And he's just someone I like playing week to week in cash. If you believe in redemption, you can play Chesson Hadley. I know he missed the cut horribly at the Honda Classic, but he had been on fire before then. Ryan Palmer kind of the same way. He had been gaining some steam, but I don't know. With Palmer, I'll wait till the Texas swing. That's when you want to play Ryan Palmer. And this is not the course for him either as a super bomber. Bryson DeChambeau did all right here last year. You could possibly use him. I mean, interesting play that I like. Jim Furyk, if you go by odds value, you will never play Furyk. He's like 145-1. But everyone knows he's not going to win. But he could get a top 20, to be honest. He made the cut at the Honda Classic, so he's not dead. And this is Jim Furyk. You know, if you don't follow golf very closely, Jim Furyk is almost like an adjective that you'd use to describe how your grandpa golfs. Doesn't hit it long at all, under 280 off of the tee. But driving accuracy of about 70%. The only difference between this Jim Furyk and the Jim Furyk of old is that his green regulation numbers were more like Steve Stricker's. But right now it's 53%, but he's quite rusty. He's looked quite rusty this year. We've only seen him twice, missing the cut by a couple strokes at the Genesis. But making the cut at the Honda, you know, that inspires a little bit of hope. But as far as fantasy scoring goes, you really don't want to mess with him unless he's going to get a 59 round again here. His fantasy scoring numbers, like per hole and stuff, are just trash because that's just what he does. But, you know, if this is a par fest, you know Furyk can par for you. He's probably just not going to win any GPPs unless he does something crazy. But, you know, he won in 2010, followed that up with three straight top 15 finishes, a runner-up in 2012. Hasn't missed the cut since. He made the cut last year in 2015, T20 in 2014. So the course history is there. He's just old. He's really old. And then Jimmy Walker, I'd like him more if he didn't have the Lyme disease. So you never know what you're going to get from him. He can miss the cut horribly at any chance. Jamie Lovemark has been rounding back into form. He's kind of been going back and forth. It's like looking awful and looking good and looking awful and looking good. Not sure which I'm going to get, but his history here is pretty good. He's been playing here since back in like 2011, playing as like an 18-year-old amateur. You know, in the last few years, he's finished top 30 this event. Pretty good when you get the driver out of his hand. Usually, I know his driving accuracy numbers are trash, but again, those come up when you get the driver out of his hand. The same goes for Charlie Hoffman, who has been making so many cuts, just cut after cut after cut, and it's gone back for quite a while. And it's about spring, and spring, you know, the Texas swing, Augusta, that's when you want to be using Charlie. That's when he rounds into form. Missed the cut pretty badly last year, and then finished T11 2016, finished almost dead last in 2015. So course history, who knows? You know, keep him in GPP, even though his game log looks like a cash game play. You're still going to want to keep him in your GPP lineups, but $7,300 is cheap as could be for him. And another good play from this range, a couple really, John Ha at $7,300. Good course history here, missed the cut the first 3 years of this event, but the last 3 years, finished ninth last year in all top 30 finishes. And he's had some top 30 finishes in a row in the Genesis and at the Honda Classic. Finished third at the Career Builder. He's made five straight cuts overall. So outside of that horrible showing at the Sony Open, he's been looking pretty good. And over the last year or so, he's been quietly making a lot of cuts. Not really making a lot of noise, but making a lot of cuts. So Ha could be interesting. And then Lucas Glover is also another another guy that likes to score on par fives, which I like. And you know, he's not the greatest putter long term, but at the slow Bermuda greens, he actually gains a tenth of a stroke, which is crazy because it's Lucas Glover. And he also sticks out on less than driver courses. Just really good at strokes gained tee to green overall. And his approach game has always been good, although it's just average this year. Just a play you can make at 7,300. He's generally a good cut maker. Then as you go down further, the plays kind of fizzle out a bit. I mean, Austin Cook will kind of jump out at 7,100, but I prefer Chris Kirk. Much better course fit there. Although I will say that Austin Cook's par 3 numbers are excellent. Just looking at fantasy scoring per hole, he sucks at par 4 scoring. Par 3s and par 5s, very, very good at. And that speaks a lot to me. Every single one of his strokes gained stat, even the slow Bermuda and less than driver courses, he's gaining at least a quarter of a stroke per round on every single aspect of his game. I know that his whole career is all of 12 events long, but he already has that win. A third of the time he's finishing top 20, half the time he's finishing top 30. I mean, Cook is just 7,100. That's just too cheap. And you've got Dom Bazzelli, who kind of broke out here last year, finishing third at this event. Finished T13 at the Honda and T26 at the Genesis Open, but missed the cut pretty horribly the three events prior to that. So definitely GPP only with him, and really GPP only with all of the guys down this range. I also like Brandon Harkins and Nick Watney at the $7,000 level. And then getting down to the $6,000 range, it's not that great. I guess Ben Martin is looking all right on the season. And statistically, his approach game is really nice, and his green regulation number is really nice. So it's one of my favorite punts from the 6K range is Ben Martin. And then Rory, the other Rory, looked a lot better than the expensive Rory at the Honda, finishing T17. Rory Sabatini's low-key been having a good season. The only missed cut he has is a missed cut by one stroke. Two missed cuts by one stroke at three course events. The Career Builder Classic and the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. So outside of those one stroke missed cuts, he's had his share of top 30, top 20 finishes, and most recently T17 at the Honda Classic. Very good green and regulation numbers, and fantastic par 5 scoring numbers. The only hole in this game is his approach game sucks, but you know, this is the kind of course where you can get away with having a bad approach game because these greens are gigantic. If you can make it up by just putting well on these long putts or lag putting, you can just save par forever and do all right. Make them up on these par fives, which is what he does. So I kind of do like Sabatini. I like him significantly better than anyone else at 6,800. And at 6,700, 6,600, I almost wouldn't play any of these guys. Maybe a touch of Tom Hoagie, although he couldn't have looked worse at the Honda Classic. And some Von Taylor. I'm feeling Von Taylor at $6,700. This is his type of course. He's pretty good at par fives for someone like him. His driving accuracy numbers are very good. And his form hasn't been bad, honestly, over the last 4 weeks. So I'd get myself a little bit of Von Taylor if I have to punt so low. But really, there aren't the studs up high that you really need to pay for. So that'll do it for this week. I've got to get going. Good luck, and we'll see you next week at a much more interesting event. I think next week is the Bay Hill Arnold Palmer Classic, so that should be a very, very fun event. But go Henrik Stenson, and go DFS Army. Let's get that money, guys. Remember, if you want to check out our awesome research station at our Domination Station Lineup Optimizer, which has been very hot over the last few weeks, you're going to want to check us out at dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO on signup to get you a lifetime 10% discount. I'm Taco. It's been Taco Tuesday, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.